Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Indiana basketball mini-series tickets are now available online at iuhoosiers.com. Both five-game and three-game packages are now available, featuring games against Louisiana Tech, South Dakota State, Arkansas, Northwestern, and Ohio State. Come check out your Indiana Hoosiers for these games over break inside beautiful Simon Scott Assembly Hall. You can visit iuhoosiers.com for more information. Go IU!
On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich and I are joined by Scott Docterman, who covers the Iowa Hawkeyes for The Athletic, as we continue our tour around the Big Ten schools, previewing each Big Ten team for this year. What is the loss of Jordan Bohannon going to mean for Iowa, and is it a total loss, or is Jordan Bohannon trying to come back? What do we expect from him this year? What do we expect from the Hawkeyes overall? They've got the nice 1-2 punch of Joe Wieskamp and Luke Garza, but some big-time holes in the backcourt. So Scott walks us through that. Walks us through what the current satisfaction level is in Iowa City with Fran McCaffrey, and also Scott gives us his impressions of the Hoosiers heading into this year. And then stick around after that. We talked to Scott for about 25 minutes, and then stick around after because Alex and I react to the scrimmage, kind of look ahead to the Gannon exhibition game, and then also talk about the importance of Dawson Garcia, who is currently on an official visit to Bloomington. So a jam-packed episode as we get ready for the season because it's almost here. Get excited. Going to have some real games to talk about here soon. So enjoy all of that talk. Before we get to all that, a quick note from our sponsor, SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big, they feel like they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. So what if their site's annoying and doesn't have the events you want? Hello, status quo. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? Well, SeatGeek does actually care. And if you want to know why they're better than the rest or see examples of satisfied customers, just take a look at the App Store, which shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. That is pretty good customer satisfaction. And the reason is because they deliver a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. They rate each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and they display them on an interactive seat map. So you can kind of see green dots, good deals, red dots are overpriced right there at a glance. You know. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I bought tickets there recently for the Zac Brown Band concert that my wife and I are going to tomorrow, and we are taking our three-year-old daughter. I have no idea how that's going to go. It's going to be cold out. It's going to be late, but we're doing it anyway. We're excited about it, and we got our tickets on SeatGeek. I have the app on my phone. It's the easiest way I've found to buy tickets, and that's why I feel comfortable recommending them to you. And SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and you will get $10 off that first purchase. Again, promo code BRINK for $10 off your first purchase at SeatGeek. All right, here now is our conversation about the Iowa Hawkeyes with Scott Docterman, and then stick around after that for Alex and I talking about the biggest stories in IU basketball right now. All right, and we are pleased to be joined this week on Podcast on the Brink by Scott Docterman, who covers Iowa athletics for The Athletic. Scott, welcome to Podcast on the Brink. It's great to have you here with us.
You know, I'm happy to be with you guys. Absolutely.
So obviously, you know, having you on to talk about the Iowa Hawkeyes, we've talked about most of the Big Ten teams yet. We haven't talked about Iowa, perhaps in part because a lot of Indiana fans probably just don't want to have to think back to the two Iowa games from last year because, you know, they were kind of tilting in some different ways, a little bit traumatic with how they ended. Certainly, you know, games that Indiana had a chance to win. But didn't, and a big part of the reason why they didn't was because of some sharp shooting from Jordan Bohannon. And so let's start with him, because that really is one of the main storylines for Iowa this year, is what is his availability going to be, if any? Can you just kind of describe the injury that he's dealing with and what the latest is on, you know, if he's expected to be back this year?
Yeah, he had a torn ligament, I guess you want to say, in his hip, and it required surgery and the removal of a bone. That's probably going to cost him, a hip replacement surgery when he's probably 50 years old. So it's pretty serious. In fact, his father, who played quarterback at Iowa, and his three older brothers, who all play Division I basketball, they're a pretty athletic family, but they're all like, "Hey, do you really want to do this?" And he says, "Yes, I want to do it. I want to play one more year." So this year, after I think it was in early May that he decided to have surgery, and it seemed like this year was going to be a lost year. He was going to try to recover. It's kind of a surgery that for some people, I think Trey Jones, it took only 3 months, but for other people, it took 8 to 9 to heal. So he thought, all right, I'm just going to take it easy and see what happens. Well, he's now in a place where he is practicing. He's not full go. He's not full contact yet, but he's out there getting up about 1,000 shots a day. And I think he's going to try to give it a go this year. Now, he may try to take it a couple of games at a time and say late November, early December. And then if it doesn't work out, then redshirt, you get a medical redshirt. But I think he's leaning towards actually trying to play this year, which is going to be it's going to be strange because, everybody has seen it. You've obviously seen it, his shooting prowess, what he can do in tight situations, shooting the ball. But he's never really been a great on-ball defender. He's been a good distributor, a very good shooter. But what's that going to do for him, lateral movement-wise, defending good guards? He may end up being a net negative if he comes back. So it's going to be interesting to see how this comes down. But just the other day, Fran McCaffrey did say that he thought that he was going to try to give it a go at some point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting if he does come back. Obviously, if he was healthy, he would be a huge part of this Iowa team, a guy who shot over 40% from threes, had high assist rates, like you said. What will they do at the point guard position without him?
I wouldn't be surprised if he does come back, that he doesn't necessarily start at the one. He'll probably be more of a two. I think that's probably, just to get him off the ball a little bit and off that pressure. But I think it looks like right now it's going to be Connor McCaffrey, the coach's son. And he's a pretty good distributor, 102 assists, only 43 turnovers, but not a real prolific scorer at all. In fact, he's not good at all from three. He only shot 20%. Three last year. So in some ways, I'm not sure what they're going to get from that position. He's going to be a guy that they rely on to kind of distribute the ball, but I just don't know what his plus is going to be, especially if Bohannon's not in the game. But behind him, they've got a couple of guys that they feel decent about. Joe Toussaint, a redshirt true freshman from the Bronx, a quick guy, probably a good distributor, can get to the hole. Play good defense, but I think there any suggestion that he's going to be ready to, assume some sort of starting role or score 10 points a game, I think is a little bit outlandish for somebody like this. And then also a transfer from Valparaiso, Bakari Evelyn, who was decent, got hurt last year, is now a grad transfer to Iowa. He's probably more of a backup to both the one and the two. So I think what separates Iowa right now from being a solid division NCAA tournament team and one that's NIT or worse is probably their guard play. And Bohannon figures into that, but then also how the new guys kind of step up.
Scott, how big of a surprise was it to you that Isaiah Moss opted to leave Iowa? Was that something that the coaching staff had been planning for? And was that something, you talk about the lack of guard depth, how big was that decision in kind of contributing to the situation now that I was in with the backcourt?
I think it's huge. I started 96 games at Iowa. Redshirt his first year. He just wasn't quite ready academically or physically. So they put a lot into him, and he was a very streaky player. There were times where he could take over a game. I think he scored 19 points in a 90-second stretch in Minnesota a couple of years ago, and could really score. Then there are other times where he completely disappeared or he went 0-for-7 from the field. So it was a little bit of a surprise that he would want to leave. I know there had been some, I won't say major conflicts, but minor conflicts possibly with the staff. A lot of times late last year, they would bring in Connor McCaffrey at the point and Isaiah Mawson sit on the bench late in the game. And I know that became a point of contention with him. And then, you know, I think he just had some options and decided, you know, he really went full go to try to graduate. Wasn't an easy process for him, but I think there was some, just some overall kind of conflicts with the staff, and he just wanted out. And originally he committed to Arkansas, and then Arkansas brought in a transfer, and then next thing you know, he ended up in Kansas. So I'll be intrigued to see how he performs there, because he's just very a streaky player. But I think when you look at Iowa, I think they've got some strengths in the front court. Certainly Joe Wieskamp, I think, is going to be a tremendous player. But the backcourt right now is just so decimated, and he would have really been a help at the two, I think, had he been there and Bohannon came back. Then I think this team is capable of getting to the NCAA tournament again. Now, without him, with that inexperience, and let's face it, this wasn't a very good defensive team anyway, this is going to be a real grind for Iowa to reach the postseason.
You talked a little bit about Connor McCaffrey, but I want to talk about the younger McCaffrey, Pat, who I believe is one of the highest rated recruits that Iowa has brought in under this coaching staff, and maybe ever. I don't know exactly the numbers, but I believe he was top 75, top 50 and by some of the services. What role do you expect him to play as a freshman, and is he a guy that you can see making a major impact right away?
I think it will be a minor impact. I think he's probably a 12 to 14 minute guy. He's probably more of a come off the bench, fill a role, probably get up and down the floor. I mean, they're going to try to throw waves. I anticipate with the issues at guard that Joe Wieskamp will move to the two at some point, and he'll come in at the three. He's really tall and lanky. I mean, he's about 6'9" now, and you know, and he's had a kind of a remarkable life, if you will. You know, 5 years ago, he had cancer right when Iowa went to the NCAA tournament and had to have surgery for thyroid cancer, and still here he is. A tremendous player. He's a different kind of player than his brother. His brother's, more 6'5", 6'6", thicker, more cerebral. Patrick is probably a better scorer. He's a bigger player. He's a front court player for the most part. And so I think he'll have a little bit more of a scoring impact than his brother, but I'm not sure that he's ready for the big time right now. And so I think he's going to be in there as a replacement, you know, get in, 5 to 6 minutes a half, maybe get six points a game on average, some games double figures, but I don't think he's going to have that kind of impact that you might expect from a four-star right away.
You know, Scott, we've talked about some pieces that I was going to be missing and some holes that are on the roster. So let's talk about what they have and really, you know, what this, especially the offense, is going to revolve around, which is one of the best 1-2 offensive punches in the country with Joe Wieskamp and Luka Garza. I mean, Wieskamp, I think we all saw, you know, just how smooth and effective of a shooter he is as a freshman. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on what kind of leap you expect him to take as a sophomore, and if he's ready, you know, to kind of be that go-to guy. And then similarly, you know, with Garza, a guy, you know, who Indiana obviously was involved in, you know, from a recruiting perspective, so fans are familiar with him. You know, he's been a guy who has you know, shown some deficiencies on the defensive end in terms of foot speed, but just always seems to, you know, be putting up double-doubles, you know, getting, you know, scoring inside and out. So how, you know, far can those two guys kind of carry Iowa?
I think they're capable of doing some big things. I mean, as you mentioned, they have that 1-2 punch will be formidable, especially on the offensive end. And let's start with Joe Wieskamp. I mean, he did enter the NBA process, pulled out, which we expected, had two visits. It went very well. But beyond that, I mean, 11 points a game, almost 5 rebounds, second on the team in rebounding. But you know, he was also, you know, tremendous from 3-point range, you know, 42%. He's got just a different kind of game that Iowa hasn't had at that position, because, you know, he's such a smooth shooter, but he's just got an all-around efficacy on the court that's just rare. And I think he's going to elevate. You know, he's an all-freshman player, which we all expected, but I think this year he's probably an all-Big Ten caliber player. I expect him to kind of grow into that 16 to 17 point range. He's going to attract a lot of feedback, you know, especially if Bohannon's not on the floor. He's going to get a lot of the best defender on the floor, so I think that's going to be a problem at times. But by and large, I mean, he can create his own shot. He can shoot from the outside. He's a really good defender. He's long. He can also rebound. So I think he's going to be the key key to Iowa's offense all the way around. And, you know, he was 6-for-6 from three against Illinois in a game last year. I expect him to be pretty streaky, and there's going to be a handful of games where he's in that 30-point range. So he's going to be a difference maker for Iowa. And then Luca Garza, everything that from what I've seen to heard about him is he has taken his game to a higher level. And, you know, last year he was at, 13 and points a game, 4.5 rebounds. I think he'll be a little bit stronger in the rebounding department because Tyler Cook's not there. But scoring, he's really focused on his shot. He is the vocal and leader on the team. He's the guy that everybody kind of looks towards for guidance and toughness. So I think he's going to be a real strength and asset also in the post. So I, you know, it's going to be interesting for Iowa is to, you know, how does their backcourt kind of help the scoring along with the front court? Because I think, you know, with Wieskamp on the wing, Garza, and then a couple other players that I think will be critical in the post would be, you know, Ryan Kreener, kind of that tough guy, come off the bench. Everybody kind of loves that toughness that he presents and some scoring. Cordell Pemsel and Jack Nungy are both coming off redshirt seasons. Pemsel was knee surgery. Nungy was kind of a coach's decision to kind of spread out the classes a little bit, but I think both are going to be, you know, pretty good players as well. So in the front court, there's no problem with Iowa. I think they're in really good shape there, especially on the scoring end. But you know, it all comes down to how do they fit in with the backcourt and how much of a drop-off is there from last year.
I want to talk a little bit about Fran McCaffrey. You know, I think for fans of other Big Ten teams, Fran can be kind of a punchline at times because of the red face on the court and just some of the issues that he's had. You know, I was actually surprised. You know, I just, you know, was looking at his, you know, kind of year-by-year rundown at Iowa. And after kind of struggling to get things going those first 4 years, you know, Iowa has made the second round of the NCAA tournament for three out of the last 5 years, which I think, you know, some people might be a little bit surprised by. What is the level of satisfaction in Iowa City with the job that Fran has done, and how kind of stable right now do you think, you know, the Fran McCaffrey program at Iowa is?
I would say right now it's kind of at a tipping point where it could go either way. You know, he's entering year 10, which really shocks me because I was there on the tarmac the day he got brought in, you know, 10 years ago. And it was just, he elevated the program because I think at the same time when Tom Crean took over, was kind of the end of the Todd Licklider era, and both programs were at all-time lows. And so you've kind of seen, you know, the way he had to build Iowa, it's got a, you know, a different kind of, you know, program, so it doesn't quite get the five stars or anybody that could just jump in right away. But you know, he's done a nice job of building it. The problem with Fran is in his program is three different times they ranked inside the top 15, including 1 year with Jared Utoff and you know, Peter Jock and those guys. I mean, they were ranked as high as number 3 in the country, and they haven't gotten to the Sweet 16. And strangely enough, Iowa's only reached the Sweet 16 once in the last 30 years. And I think that's where Iowa fans are having a problem right now, because this program, historically in the 80s with Tom Davis and Lute Olson, was, you know, among the better ones. In fact, and I looked this up, in 1999, only Indiana and Illinois had more NCAA tournament appearances than Iowa did at that point. And since then, they've only had seven over the last 20 years. And, you know, they let Tom Davis go to pick up Steve Alford. That didn't work out well for either party. You know, Todd Licklider kind of drove it in the ditch. And now Fran has kind of built it to a point where there's some stability. But I think, you know, everybody wants it to go to the next level. And it's not necessarily Final Fours and championships, although that's what people would love. But I think it's more of a matter of feeling like you've got a chance to compete for that. So not getting to that second weekend when, you know, you had, you know, Marble and you know, a few of those guys, and they're ranked 10th in the country, and then losing 7 out of 8 to end the season, and having Utah, you know, they haven't even, since 79, they haven't had a Big Ten regular season championship. So I think people want something that they can have a reunion for in some certain period of time, and they can't have one. So right now with Fran, it's about, can you build something and achieve something? And he's been able to build it okay, but achieving it's been tough. And then finally, you know, yeah, his antics, if he was winning, would be fine. But he's, you know, when you're losing and you're not getting to the Sweet 16, it wears on everybody. So, you know, and of course what happened last year at Ohio State, you know, cussing out an official under the tunnel was uncalled for. And you know, so I think there's it's reaching a tipping point. I think if this year they don't get to the NCAA tournament, I think that fans will probably start tipping the other direction because there's a critical mass already that kind of wants change there.
Scott, that's interesting that you talk, it's kind of at a tipping point. I'm curious just from your perspective, somebody that's been around Iowa athletics for a long time, do you think it's realistic for Iowa to expect more out of its basketball program? And I ask you that because, you know, Indiana has been kind of a program that's been stuck in neutral now since some would say for the last 20, 25 years. And I look around the Big Ten and I look at some of the programs. I mean, obviously Michigan State has kind of been the class of the league for a while. Purdue's got it going pretty well. I think Ohio State's on the upward trajectory. I mean, do you think it's realistic for Iowa as a program to expect much more than what they're achieving right now in basketball?
I think a little bit more. I don't think it's realistic for them to expect Final Fours on a frequent basis or anything. But I think what's realistic for Iowa is when you are a good team and you're ranked third in the country and you have Jared Utoff, who is a potential, you know, is a second team All-American, and Adam Woodbury and Mike Gazelle and those guys, go to the Sweet 16. You know, give your fans a chance to think that you got a chance to win a national title, even if you're not going to get there. And if you could do that, say, once out of every 5 years, get to the tournament three more times and then have one rebuilding year, I think you're okay. And I think fans will accept that. It's just the constant not getting over the top, even to a Sweet 16 once, is really hard to accept. And you know, there's a lot of people in their 40s and 50s, probably a lot like myself, who remember the years in the 80s where, you know, they reached the Sweet 16 four times in 10 years, that you think that you feel like that every year they should be in that conversation. And I think getting there once every 5 years would probably be satisfactory, but falling short. And you know, and again, the three best years that France had, they finished 1-7, 2-6, 2-6 in those 3 years. So the buildup has just crashed, and that's been really hard for fans to accept. So you know, I covered several Iowa Indiana games at Assembly Hall. I understand the tradition there. It's probably at a higher tier, not only historically, but just you know, in basketball terms, and probably has higher aspirations year in and year out than Iowa does. But I think Iowa can be better than what it is. Illinois too, for that matter.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of the crashing and burning at some of the end of these seasons, and I think one thing is that cover the Big Ten and look at teams on a week-to-week basis and look at the numbers. One thing that's always stood out to me with Iowa, at least in Big Ten play specifically, is their defense and how deficient it seems to be. Do you see that more as a scheme problem with what Fran's trying to do? Is it a personnel? Is it a combination of the two? And do you see anything that they can change going into this year that's going to make it different, make it any different? Because it, you know, it seems like every year they're in the bottom three or four defensively, in at least in conference play.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change, and I think it could be worse this year. In fact, and part of that is, I mean, 2 years ago they were the worst in Big Ten play since 95 Northwestern, and allowing points. I think it was 83 points a game in conference play. I want to say, in his 9 years, five of them they've been ranked to last, and two others they were second to last. So in some part, it's part of the scheme. He really wants to get up and down the floor. They're among the top two or three teams every year in scoring. So with that, leads more possessions, more points. So I think people can kind of get that, you know, you're not going to play a Wisconsin style and you're not going to be a Wisconsin defense. However, when you don't have anybody who can stop the ball, and that's been a real problem for them, you know, certainly last few years, you know, before Anthony Clemens and Mike Gazelle left, you know, they were okay at it. But the last 3 to 4 years, they've just really not had anybody who can, you know, be an on-ball defender. And that's just killed their defense because, you know, whether it's the point guard getting in the lane and, you know, moving the ball or driving, they just have really struggled in that. And so I think when you have that combination of not having that tough, aggressive defender who can take care of the point guard, and then also not having having a style that's kind of up and down the floor, that's why we've seen Iowa on the road really have some issues. And not so much last year, a little bit last year, but previous year, I want to say they had 9 straight games where they were down by 17 or more points on the road. And it was just, and you could just see the way it was building. So I don't think that's ever going to change, even if Iowa got a dominant type point guard and a great defender. But I think it can be mitigated if they have the right players, just because their style of play, while entertaining, also could be maddening, because you know you're never going to get a stop when you really need it.
Scott, for the final few minutes that we have you here, I would love to get your impressions of Indiana, heading into the season, kind of just, studying them from afar. And B, where do you see Iowa kind of falling in the hierarchy of the Big Ten? Because it's kind of one of those where people seem pretty, there's kind of some consensus about certainly at the top and then, the top couple, but then it just seems like there's this morass of teams in the middle. So I'd love to get your perspective on where you see Iowa fitting in there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Indiana, honestly, I haven't studied a lot of Big Ten basketball as of late, just because I'm so inundated with football. But, historically as a program, I love it. I actually, I remember going there when Crean, just got, was 1-17 and still, I think their only win was against Iowa that year. And just the passion that the fan base has is second to none. It's probably my favorite arena. Although I will say that the year that the ceiling tile fell and broke was horrible for me, because I drive there and I was all the way to Crawfordsville and I had to turn around and drive back.
Oh no.
Then come back the next week. And it was just, it was the worst. But, I do think, I look at Indiana in some veins, kind of like Kansas. I think it should be in that ballpark. I'm not saying that they should win 10 straight Big Ten titles or anything like that, but I do think year in and year out, it should be an upper echelon program. Obviously you could speak more to this, but when you get a guy like a Robeo Langford, if he could just stay a couple of years, I think it would just change the program in so many different ways. I think Victor Oladipo did that, and by sticking around a few years. And so I think getting those one and dones, and a lot of them just aren't, they haven't reached their, not even their potential, but they haven't been an all Big Ten caliber player right away. And then they leave. I think that's been kind of not disastrous, but really tough on Indiana over these years, because there's been some really good players, no doubt. And where I look at Iowa is, last year I think they were 6th or 7th in the Big Ten. They were 10-10 in league play. This year I do not see them being in that discussion. I think they're going to lose a lot of close games. And part of it, they have a really difficult non-conference schedule. They play Texas Tech. They play at Iowa State, which is always a tough game for Iowa, for both teams for that matter. But they're playing, at Syracuse. Cincinnati and Chicago. So they've got, some really difficult opponents in non-conference. And then, 10, the road games, I mean, going to Indiana, that's a game that where if you're Iowa, you probably think if you're at home, you got a shot, but on the road, you probably don't. So I think that's going to be tough. You'd say Rutgers at home, but Rutgers blew them out last year when they were on their little slide after Fran got suspended. So, I think that they're probably a team that's going to be competitive, but they're probably in that 8-12 range where, just depending on the right matchup at the right time, they might be able to win. But I probably think of them as a 8-12 Big Ten team and, maybe battling for the NIT. In this league, as we all know, guard play matters so much. And unless they have somebody who can really determine the outcome, and Bohannon could if he's healthy and can play, but if he can't, they're really in trouble. And if he can, I just wonder how he's going to be able to do that possession by possession, on that hip in February, trying to defend good guards in critical situations.
Yep. Scott, you've killed all my Iowa optimism. I think I picked them to finish 8th in the Big Ten. And now after listening to you talk for 25 minutes, I feel like I want to go back and make a change to that. So that's interesting. I'm just, from the sense I'm getting from talking to you, is that even if Bohannon plays, you're kind of weary as to what type of player he can be. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I do wonder about that, just because I still think he can score, and he's a very streaky player, and we've seen you've seen the bad from your perspective, the bad side from Iowa is the good. But I just wonder, how is that going to translate to defense? And the reason why I say that, I mean, they were 10-10 last year with an all Big Ten caliber player in Tyler Cook, who's now with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think they're, you know, Joe Wieskamp's going to be one of the best players in the league. But how does that translate to, you know, when they're going to play a lot of close games, and can they defend? I mean, they, as you mentioned, you know, they are one of the worst teams in the Big Ten every year, and now they don't have anybody who can really do that to stop the ball. So I think they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to win some games they probably shouldn't. I think they're going to lose some games that they shouldn't as well. And it's just going to be that 4 to 5 game swing that we always see between teams, say, 6 and 12 in the Big Ten, where there's not a whole lot of difference, but it just matters as to foul trouble to, you know, how you defend in the critical last minutes of the game. And I do think they're going to beat somebody they shouldn't, but I just don't have a lot of faith that they're going to come through and win 10 or 11 games in the Big Ten this year.
Well, Scott, thank you very much for your time. As I mentioned at the top, Scott writes for The Athletic, yet another reason to get a subscription to The Athletic. So many great writers there covering the different Big Ten teams. So we really appreciate the time. Good luck with the rest of football season and kind of making it through this, which is always a difficult transition for the folks that cover football and basketball over these next few weeks, because I know it's pretty time consuming.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I got to go see, you know, probably the lowest scoring game in the Big Ten this weekend, you know, Iowa at Northwestern. If it's more than 20 points, I'll be shocked. So
just, well, it's all right. It's, it, you know, it'll be the nice balance for when basketball season starts and all the Iowa games are like 95 to 90. So
hey, at least that's entertaining. I'd rather watch a 95-90 loss than a 40 to 45 win. So.
Well, cool. Well, thank you, Scott. Have a great weekend. And we'll look to talk to you again in the future.
Okay, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, are you good to hang around for a few extra minutes? Because I've got some stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I want to talk about the scrimmage. Want to kind of look ahead to Gannon. Before we do that, though, I would like to talk to you about T-shirts, and specifically T-shirts from our friends at Home Field Apparel. They are back for another year of sponsoring Podcast on the Brink, which we are very, very excited about. I don't know if you've been keeping tabs, but every week during the football season, they've been putting out a new, like, IU football-inspired shirt. This year, the new one is one with an old logo from the 1979 team commemorating the Holiday Bowl championship team. And all these shirts have just been really, really cool. You know, I mean, that's what Home Field does. They bring back these cool vintage logos, put them on, you know, the comfiest material that you could possibly have for a T-shirt, and give Indiana fans some really cool, unique, you know, different kind of stuff to get high quality material. And Connor, of course, who runs Home Field Apparel, he's an IU grad. They do everything in house in Indianapolis, and so, you know, we've been excited to work with them, you know, since it started. We're excited to work with them again. And one thing to note that's really, really cool is for Podcast on the Brink listeners, use the promo code BRINK. And whereas last year it was a 15% discount, this year it is a 20% discount. And that's off the entire order. So go to homefieldapparel.com. You know, go up, it says find your school, go to Indiana University. You can browse through everything they have, all the vintage football items. They've still got a ton of, you know, basketball shirts. My favorite remains the Bison hoodie logo. It's our first, like, cold day in Dallas, so I'm busting it out later today. I'm excited about that. But pick up any of that stuff. Use the promo code BRINK. You'll get 20% off. That's our friends at homefieldapparel.com. And keep checking back as they keep releasing cool new shirts. All right. Let's talk real quick, Alex, before we sign off here. Number one, about the scrimmage. We haven't had a chance to talk, you know, since the IU Marquette scrimmage. And obviously, you don't want to take too much away from something where basically all we got was a box score and 2 minutes of Marquette highlights, which are obviously designed to make Marquette look good and not Indiana. Is there anything that you took away from that that is worth mentioning?
And I talked about this yesterday on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison in Southern Indiana. He asked me kind of what I was looking forward to, and I'm really just looking forward to seeing whether or not Devontae Green and Rob Fennessy play, because we were told earlier in the month that they were nicked up and didn't play in the Hoosier Exterior scrimmage, and then, you know, several weeks later they didn't play in a closed scrimmage. You would think if they were able to play, they would be in something like that, because that's really your only opportunity in the preseason to go against a quality opponent outside of not to take anything away from Gannon, but obviously you're going to learn a little bit more from playing Marquette than you would them. So if they don't play on Tuesday, then I don't want to say I'm officially worried, but I'm. My ears are perked up a little bit, wondering what's going on here, because that would be almost a month of not seeing them. To me, that doesn't indicate a minor bump or a bruise. If it's a minor bump or a bruise, you're out of the lineup for a couple of days, and then you're back in. And then I still want to see Jerome Hunter more. We saw him for 7 or 8 minutes at Hoosier Hysteria. That's really all we've seen. He played, I think it was 14 minutes against Marquette. Don't quote me on that. I don't have the box score right in front of me, but I think it was 14 minutes. What's he look like now that he's had several weeks? I've heard some good things about how he's progressing. I've also heard that it's going to take him some time to I keep hearing the word rust when folks talk to me about him that have kind of seen him in practice and that kind of know his situation. So, that's really what I'm looking forward to. But the biggest thing on my priority list is Green and Finnessy, just to see if they play, because I feel like there's a lot of optimism right now about this team. But if all of a sudden those guys are out to start the season, November can get pretty interesting real quick without both of those guys, because, I think one of the things that everyone's kind of been looking forward to about the first month of the season is, hey, this is an opportunity to kind of get everyone into their roles and acclimated to playing with one another. The schedule is going to be favorable to go something like 7-0. If you're missing one or two of those guys, that's not really the way you want to. You want to start out with everybody, particularly two of your probably three or four most important players on the court. And if they can't go, then I think there's reasons for concern at that point.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, a lot of the optimism is built around the fact that people feel like Indiana's going to have a pretty good backcourt, but there's no depth in the backcourt. You know, I mean, if Devontae or Rob are out for any extended period of time, you've got Al, and you've got Armon, and that's it. You know, and, you know, we saw at the end of the scrimmage, you know, apparently Al, you know, nicked up his hand or something happened that he couldn't play the last 8-9 minutes. And basically Armon was out there handling it himself, which is great experience for Armon to get. And I think that's great for his development. But you're right. It would be nice. And you would assume that if Rob and Devontae were ready to go, they'd be there. You know, and I've heard from a couple different sources that they arrived a little bit late to the scrimmage, didn't have a whole lot of time to warm up. And so I don't know, you know, with the injuries those guys are dealing with, if that affected their availability. We just don't know. It's a whole lot of guessing, and that's why, to your point, Tuesday against Gannon, I think everybody will just be able to, you know, take a deep breath, a nice cleansing exhale if Rob and Devontae are there in the starting lineup and ready to play, because then I think, you know, everything will feel okay at that point. But yeah, I mean, you know, and look, we just got done talking with a guy for 27 minutes about what can happen when you don't have guards. And so, you know, all of the optimism about Indiana is based on those guards being the strength of the team. And so I'm not concerned about it yet, because, you know, from no one that I've talked to has given me reason to really be concerned, but no one really fully knows. And so we'll find out for sure against Gannon. So I completely agree with you there. The other thing that I'll be interested to see, and I don't know how much this will really get against Gannon, but it's certainly going to be something that I'm going to be interested to see as we go through the first part of the season, is what is Justin Smith's role and what do the lineups look like with him in there? You know, one thing I thought was interesting from the scrimmage is, you know, he took the most shots on the team with 10 shots, you know, and actually had 3 assists, which I thought was a nice sign. He's not been a guy who has been much of a creator, but, you know, so for him to get 3 assists, you know, he clearly had his hands on the ball, was a big part of the offense. And, I suppose that makes some sense if Devontae and Rob aren't out there. He's one of your few experienced guys. So, again, I don't want to take too much away from that. But I am going to be interested to see where he is. You know, do they try and shoehorn him in some at the three, where his struggles as a shooter are really going to be magnified and you're essentially going to be playing a lineup with only 2 shooters out there? Or does he play more at the four, which means that you're only going to be able to get one of Joey, Duran, and Trace on the court? You know, and some of that maybe, you know, depend on Jerome Hunter's availability. Some of it obviously will depend on, you know, the guard availability. But I'm just going to be really interested to see what the lineups look like when Justin is out there and what, if any, expansion of skills we see from him on the offensive end and if he's able to step out and shoot it a little bit better. because that to me is just one of the biggest question marks for this team and how you start constructing lineups. And so I'll be, you know, again, how much will we learn from that against Gannon? I don't know, but it's definitely going to be something I want to watch as you go through the first part of the season.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, I think people are looking forward to this exhibition game a little bit more than usual because the Hoosier Hysteria scrimmage was so short. We it was like a, you know, 7 or 8 minutes, and then all of a sudden, it was over. I thought maybe they would have two halves or something like that, and it was.
They can't take this away from us. This will be 40 minutes. We will get our 40 minutes.
Exactly, and there will be no running clock or anything like that. We'll actually have to watch a full game. So, and then I'm sure we're going to make a bunch of crazy takes after the one exhibition game, and how that'll go all out the window by the time they play.
Didn't
Florida
Demezi
State
make like December? 5 threes in an exhibition game last year, if I recall correctly, or like 4 or 5 threes?
He may have made something like that. But yeah, it's I'm just glad we're actually going to have something to talk about other than hypothetical lineups and, you know, breaking down different off-season things. Let's actually talk about some basketball. That'd be a welcome change for the podcast.
I agree. Last thing I'd like to hit with you, Dawson Garcia is on his official visit this weekend. I think everybody understands the importance of this official visit. I mean, this is a borderline 5-star prospect. I think right now he's a 4-star by most, but, you know, a versatile guy that really would kind of fill two different roles that Archie Miller hasn't had. One on the court, one off the court. The one on the court is a front court guy that actually has real versatility. You know, that can, you know, apparently from everything we've heard and seen in highlight videos and stuff, you know, can face the basket, can make shots, can be a real inside out guy that you can build some versatile lineups around, you know, and might be a McDonald's All-American. So, I mean, I don't think we need to, you know, talk about the importance of his talent and what he could mean to next year's roster, but also, you know, would represent Archie's first real elite recruit out of state. You know, Race Thompson, Jerome Hunter, both really good recruits, 4-star guys, but this guy could be a McDonald's All-American, you know, and it's one thing to kind of come in, start getting the top guys from Indiana, but if Archie can start becoming a player for, and if Indiana can start becoming a player for 5-star guys in the Midwest, that's obviously the next step to expanding, you know, your talent pool and where you can get those elite guys from. So there's no shortage of importance for this recruitment. What, you know, and we expect the official visit to go well, but do you have any thoughts or expectations for Dawson Garcia and what we may hear from this official visit and what his ultimate decision may be?
You know, it's interesting because he's never been to Indiana before. So everything obviously that he's obviously said some positive things about the program and has good relationships, but I think this is a pretty pivotal weekend from the standpoint of, you know, he's learned a lot about the program from different people in the coaching staff. Now he's actually got to see it and buy into it. We've seen instances with guys like Jordan Geronimo who, you know, visited, fell in love with it, committed right after. That's what Indiana has to hope for in this situation. I know Marquette's done a ton of work with his recruitment, or has recruited him as long as anybody, has a great relationship, has already had him on campus for a visit. They, I think by most, are considered to be the perceived leader. So Indiana has to leapfrog them. And you just wonder if this weekend will be enough. The one thing I will say is, while I do think he's an important recruit, I don't necessarily think it's the end of the world if they don't get him, because next year's team is still going to have Joey Brunk and Trace Jackson Davis. Now, would the front court look a lot more formidable and more deep if Dawson Garcia was a part of it? Absolutely. But I don't necessarily think it's he's a can't miss prospect. Now, the coaching staff may feel differently about that, but just kind of looking at it from a, you know, a roster perspective, and you assume that Trace Jackson Davis will be back for a sophomore year. You obviously know Joey Brunk's going to be back for another year. I do think the added depth would be a huge thing. I don't necessarily view him as a can't miss type of kid. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, is this going to be his last visit? Is he going to go see some other schools after this, or is this kind of the end of the road? I think this is the last visit, I think you got to feel pretty good about your chances if you're IU. If you get to make the last impression, I'd be a little concerned if after this he starts taking more visits. You probably wouldn't have a good vibe at that point.
All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off for the weekend? Hopefully Indiana, the football team, brings home a victory against Nebraska, and then the basketball team gets off to a good start on Tuesday with, fingers crossed, all of its guards out there. Because we don't get that panic started too early this year.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's all I'm looking forward to is seeing who's out there, who's playing, because the minutes are obviously going to look a lot different for certain guys. If Finnessy and Green can play, the minutes for some of those other guys that were quite elevated in the scrimmage. I was a little bit surprised how much Demezi played and Armon in that scrimmage, but then you kind of consider the fact that Durham went out and those two other guys didn't play. It kind of makes a little bit more sense, but those minutes will be fluctuating quite a bit if and when those two guys get back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, if they're healthy all year, do you see any path to them not playing a minimum of 75, possibly 80% of the minutes? I mean, just because of how important they are to the team and the lack of depth?
No, I mean, somebody asked me today in the forum, we're doing the Ask Me Anything, the monthly thread, and somebody asked me to kind of give my prediction for minutes per game for everybody on the roster. So I had to come up with 200 minutes and allocate them, and I had Finnessy and Green, I think, as the only two guys that I projected to play over 30 a game. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that kind of gives you an idea of, at least from my perspective, how important they both are. I mean, I'm not saying that they're the two best or most impactful players, but you look at the scoring role that Devontae is going to have to fill, and the fact that Indiana had, you know, arguably some of its best performances of the season last year when Finnessy was in the lineup and healthy. I mean, they don't beat Michigan State without his defense against Cassius Winston. You don't know if they beat Butler without his heroic shot there at the end. He had a really good game against Louisville, I think, for the most part. I mean, he's a good defender. He keeps guys in front of him on defense, makes solid plays. I don't necessarily think he's ever going to be a superstar, but I just think it'd be a very unfortunate start to the season for Indiana if either of those guys are out.
Yep. All right. Well, have a good weekend, everybody. Sorry this week's episode was a little bit late. We tried recording with Scott earlier in the week and had all kinds of weird issues. So glad we were able to get this done on Friday morning. Really appreciate his insight on the Hawkeyes. And hey, you know, the season previews for other Big Ten teams are pretty much done. If you were holding out hope that we were going to do dedicated episodes on Northwestern and Minnesota and Rutgers and Nebraska, we apologize. But I think we got to all the other ones, didn't we? Pretty sure we got to all the other ones. But we ran out of time for the other teams. So now the season starts. And as Alex, as you said, we'll have some games to analyze and some recruiting decisions to talk about. So it's all ready to start. Buckle up, everybody. Another season is here. All right. Check out homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code BRINK. And we will talk to you guys next week on Podcast on the Brink. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.